Mr. Atkin, reel 12. Mr. Atkin, at the end of the last reel, we were talking about the official food ration in Book and Bowl and what that consisted of. Could we now talk about how people went about getting extra food and how important getting an extra ration or finding extra food was to survival?
Well, it was very important because you were very, very hungry. And the people who had more food were the German political prisoners. Most of them were elderly men. And I soon realized that walking into the... We were free to walk around the camp. And sort of walking and just standing near would mean now and then that one of them would give you a piece of bread. I looked sort of maybe 14 or 15 year old, so I appeared to be one of the youngest. Maybe I was one of the younger. And they would give me, without discussing or without talking, they would give me a piece of bread or some other food. Also, then I found out if I walked in the direction of the kitchen, which was again maybe half a kilometer away from where I was, but I was free to walk over the whole area at that time, and I would find some carrot or a beetroot or something, and it was all very, very important to supplement the food that you received. Also were the Danish students, where they were playing, they had a lot of food, and they would even, now and then, they ignored us. We were sort of standing, younger prisoner, watching them through the wire netting, you know, chain link fencing, and now and then they would sort of take out a piece of chocolate and hand over, which was welcome, which was very... And I found that without that, I would be sort of really starving. But that would, not many people could do it. Not everyone knew what to do. Many people were just lying on their bunks and very depressed. The Americans, for example, there was a group of them very nearby. They couldn't speak, they couldn't communicate with anybody. And they were in a terrible state. They were just lying on their bunks and looking. I felt very sorry for them.
Were they still in uniform?
No, they were not in uniform. The story was, whether it is true or not, I don't know. The story was that they were dropped behind the lines, not in uniforms. And therefore, they were put in Auschwitz, in Buchenwald. The only people who were in uniforms were the Russian prisoners of war, and there were many of them. The Americans, there were maybe 20 or 30, and this was the story was that they were dropped behind the lines to do some sabotage or some intelligence work. We didn't know what it was, and that's why they...
And they were treated the same as the Jewish prisoners?
They were treated, they got the same food as we did. They were nearby, and they were standing on appel, and were being counted. And I went two or three times just simply to look at them because it was a sensation, Americans. And I think there was even one or two black Americans. Maybe it was the first time, once before the war, I saw a black man, because in Poland you didn't have them. So just to see a black man was a novelty. No, I didn't have many immediate friends around me at the time. I sort of made a few new acquaintances.
Is there any evidence of racism towards the black Americans?
No. There was no, I didn't feel there was anti-Semitism in Buchenwald at all. We were all in the same boat. I know some of them, the Danish students, as I said, were much better off. But I felt I was amongst friends. I was surrounded by friends. The enemies were the Germans. The only people who were in danger were those who misbehaved, who did something terrible in the previous camps. Those were in danger because there was a kind of an organization inside the camp, and the impression I had that communists were in charge, German communists, ex-communists or communists, and some of the Russians. Well, I remember one of them from Moscow. He seemed a very intelligent, a young man, and people sort of listened to him very carefully. I could understand Russian at that stage and communicate because the Polish language is sort of similar. And the feeling I had that those who wanted to complain had to go to those authorities, to those kapos and blockältesten, and people like him, and they would ask what if you wanted to complain. From our camp, there were few complaints because nobody really did anything terrible in the previous camp, and we realized that the penalties were very severe. So we didn't complain. That's right, yes. That was the...
Was that their only function?
Judging. They kept order up to a point. They, if anyone, I didn't see it, but the biggest crime in any of the camp was if one inmate would steal any food from another inmate. It didn't occur, to my knowledge, to anybody while I was there, but if anyone... I heard that it happened previously, and I know that it happened since, and in many camps, that these things were very severely punished if the culprit was caught.
With reference to the kapos and the blockältesten, can you explain to me the structure, the kind of prisoner command structure?
Well, not that I know much about it. You see, when I arrived, it was just a couple of days after an air raid, and everything around the camp was destroyed. Maybe that's why we didn't go to work, and therefore the situation was a little bit different, maybe, from what it used to be earlier. And all I know that when the appel, just before the appel, took place. They were the people who called out everyone to line up, and they were the people who talked to the SS men,
the Blockältesten,
and they are the ones who were kind of the intermediaries between us and they had to tell us what to do because the SS men didn't want to get involved, probably in chasing us and telling us to get out. So they lined everybody up, we stood for an hour, and then the assessment came for a few minutes, and they reported to them how many are present, how many corpses, and how many died, and so on. And we stood for a couple of hours usually started about 5 or 6 o'clock and lasted for an hour or 2 hours.
What was the difference between the Blockältesten's role and
the Blockältesten was in charge. In our case, I mean, it was a big hut, so there might have been 600 or 800 men, and he was in charge of the whole. He had his own sort of little room inside. He obviously had better food, but he was better dressed and sort of looked tall and strong to me and very confident. The kapos seemed to be sort of his helpers. But I think they were more connected with the inmates at the time when everyone was going out to work. So I didn't see it. But then a kapo was attached who didn't come with us. He was a German political prisoner, and he might have been 55 or 60 years old, and he somehow went with our group to the new camp, but he wasn't with us before. And he was in a very privileged position, but he was quite a nice man.
Which category of prisoners did the Black Elder States and Capos mainly come from? You mentioned that the ones involved in the underground organisation were communist.
I think they were political and mainly communist.
Were any of them Jewish prisoners?
No, not as far as I could tell, no. I think the ones that I saw were not Jewish. I was not, at the time I was, in the area where I was, there were very few Jewish prisoners. There were few Hungarian Jews sort of arrived as well, but there were the newcomers, and the newcomers didn't have any important positions. It was the ones who were there for many, many years that were in the sort of VIP position.
Can we talk now about the German command structure within the camp? Was there a commandant?
I wasn't aware. I didn't see him. I didn't see. All we had is the towers.
Watchtowers.
The watchtowers. They were quite a long distance away from where I was. I was more or less in the center of the camp. So you couldn't see it from where I was. When you went out of the camp, you could see them. And at night, they had those large lights so that they could see. But I doubt if anybody escaped. I never heard of anyone escaping from Buchenwald. So I'm not able to say anything about it, because behind Buchenwald was this the work where the work was done, which was all destroyed.
Were the watchtowers staffed day and night?
Yes, yes.
Would there be any patrols?
Outside? That I don't know, because after I never went out after dark. We were not allowed to go
during
out of the barracks.
During
the day, yes, I could walk quite a long way during the day in all directions, but I never got close to the outer perimeter. Only that one day when they took us outside to do a little bit of work, I could see how vast was the area outside the camp. And then there was another barbed wire. There was sort of a barbed wire around the camp and the inmates were, and then maybe a distance of half a mile or a kilometer, don't know the exact distance, and then another perimeter. But the distances were so vast that I only saw a small fraction of it.
And you don't know whether these fences, these barbed wire fences, were patrolled by German soldiers or SS members?
No, that I don't know. No.
Were they electrified, the outer fences?
I don't remember asking anyone about it, and I don't remember seeing. That I don't know. Probably they were, but I was not aware of that.
Were they?
If they were.
The German soldiers, SS or?
They were the SS, yes.
Were they very involved in camp life? I mean, were they very apparent?
Only during the appell, the roll call. Apart from that, I didn't see them, but that day when they took us to work outside, I did see them from a distance. But they didn't get close to us. Well, not when I was there. They didn't.
Where was their accommodation?
Well, apparently the barracks were outside the camps, and some of them were destroyed during the air raid. And from what I heard from the French, the Jewish Frenchman and the French Jew, that the barracks that he used to clean, although they went into the shelter, they were destroyed. So I suppose many of them lost their lives during the raid.
various points touched upon discipline. Can we talk about discipline a little bit now? You've mentioned you were whipped, and then you know about the discipline enforced by the underground organisation, a punishment system for past crimes. On a day-to-day level, how is discipline kept?
In Buchenwald?
Yes.
In Buchenwald, when I was there, I was freer than at any time prior to that. No work. Obviously, I got up reasonably early, and I started wandering around because I found it just interesting. But some of the men were just lying on the banks, very depressed, very down.
You were allowed to stay in the block, in the barracks all day, if you wished.
Yes. The weather was good. It was August, very sunny. I don't remember any rain. And therefore it was much more pleasant to be outside, and yet some people were unable or unwilling to move out.
Was there much brutality, any beatings, being hit or
assaulted? No, apart from the ones who were punished because of some crimes that they had committed before. No, as far as I know, no one who was innocent was beaten up or had any reason for being afraid.
Was there any particular routines that you had to follow, such as making a bed or...
No, there was no... No. There was no bed. There was just a single blanket, and you slept in your... striped pyjamas. You took off your shoes and put them under your head.
Would they be taken?
Well, I had clogs, so those wooden clogs. And there were cases. If someone had a good pair of shoes or boots, they could have disappeared. But I didn't lose anything. I had nothing to lose.
How did you keep your clothing in any kind of a wearable state of repair?
Well, I just got my striped pyjamas in Buchenwald when I arrived, and it wasn't too bad. I didn't need to repair it, and I don't know what would have happened if they were torn. There was a tailor, because later in the camp there was a tailor. But I never had any need to repair any of either my jacket or my trousers or the shirt that I had.
Can we talk now about health? You've mentioned the typhoid injections.
Yes.
That you avoided these.
Yes.
Can we go back to that? How did
yes.
you manage to avoid them?
Well, we were sort of informed by that we had to queue up and get those various injections, and I didn't want to, because those who had those injections said that they were very painful, and afterwards they had a sort of high fever for about a day. And knowing that I already had fever when I was in the ghetto, typhoid, when I was in the ghetto, I decided to hide. So I slid under the lowest of the banks for an hour. And when there was not a proper record kept of those that did have the injections, and therefore they didn't realize that myself and maybe one or two others didn't queue up for the injection.
What would have been the punishment had you been caught avoiding the injection?
I don't really know, because as far as I know, nobody was caught. The few that didn't go were not caught, so I cannot tell.
Was there problems, as in the work camp previously, with lice?
No, because we were disinfected. You see, I was only 2 weeks in Buchenwald, and if you were disinfected 2 weeks previously, there was no problem. It probably took a month or a bit longer before this became a problem.
Did other prisoners have a problem with it that you were aware of?
I think that those that stayed longer had to be disinfected at frequent intervals.
Were there what came to be known as Muslim men in the camp?
Yes, the name Muslim man was known, and there were not many, but some of the Hungarian prisoners of war who arrived recently, some of them looked sort of very thin, and that name referred to prisoners who didn't have much longer to live, who lost their will to live, and there were few people like that. I didn't see anyone like that actually dying of starvation when I was there, but the word Muslim was well known.
What was the major reason why people were dying? Was it disease or hunger?
I would say hunger and despair, sort of giving up hope. There was something about the eyes that you could tell. Not only everyone was thin, or vast majority, and not everyone was a complete skeleton, and but there was something about the way those people walked, dragging their feet, sort of the head lowered down, and once you looked into their eyes, it was, you could see quite clearly they haven't got long to live, and there were few people like that. There were, of course, many more in the ghetto.
What was the difference? Was there a lot of people
not so many in Buchenwald when I was there. Apparently conditions became worse afterwards, but I only learned about these things after the war. But when I was there, it wasn't too bad, because the people who were arriving, say from the Warsaw Uprising, they looked quite healthy. There were no transports with sort of people who were really exhausted, apart from the few Hungarians that I saw, who looked sort of thinner. Maybe they spent a week in a train or longer, maybe they were in some other camp where conditions were worse than the one where I was.
If somebody did die, what would happen to the body? What procedure would be gone?
Well, if he was not stabbed or executed, then at the appel they would sort of present him and show to the assessment that there is a corpse. But there was always, when you went to the latrines, when you went to the toilet, you could always see two or three corpses. But people who, yes, yeah. But those were people who were murdered.
Were they just
and
left there?
They were just left there, and the Germans didn't seem to worry about it. They didn't sort of, I didn't see the camp elders. The block leader would sort of report it and tell the assessment what happened. Whether he said, I didn't hear what he said, whether he said someone fell in and drowned, and if you were, and the Germans were not interested.
When a body was presented then at Appell, what would happen then? How would the body be?
There was the small crematorium. It was a small, there was a chimney and a crematorium and in the camp, and those that died were burned.
Who worked in the crematorium?
I didn't go inside. I passed by. I could see the building, but it was a small building with a big chimney. So obviously it was just suitable for burning a few corpses a day or several. But it wasn't a big building.
Was You mentioned that the Muslim men seem to have given up mentally, to give up hope, and that this was an important factor for survival.
Yes.
How do you think your time at Book of World affected your mental health? How would you have assessed your mental health at this stage after all you've gone through?
Well, at this stage, as I said before, I was quite pleased that we were not singled out, and I could see that the whole of Europe is involved, and therefore the Jews are not the only people who are suffering. And that gave me confidence. Also, because I had such a lot of experience, prior experience, I realized that I am better able to take the strain and the stress of it. So somehow it gave me more confidence and more hope. Then I realize I'm younger, I've got sort of more stamina, and I felt I have a better chance of survival than many, many people who are in the same position.
How did you first find out that you were going to leave Book of World?
Oh, we were told after about 2 weeks that the following morning we will go away to another camp.
Who told you this?
I think it was this man called Blady, Blady, who was the leader of our group. Or one of his assistants. And the following morning, we gathered in the cinema. There was no showing. This was in the morning. And this was the first and the only time that I was inside. And they counted us. Few were missing. And they went looking for them. And I know we were 600 then, and two people were missing. Later they appeared. One of them wanted to run away. He wanted to stay on in Buchenwald. And in the last minute, he could have done so, because the train was ready to leave, and suddenly he appeared.
When you gathered in the cinema,
and we were counted,
was that the 600 who'd arrived together?
It was the 600 that arrived together, plus this one capo, who was a German political prisoner. Somehow he was attached to our group, and he became our capo. He didn't have much to do later on.
Was the cinema like a cinema today?
Well, very simple structure, and the seats were just wooden benches and chairs. The floor wasn't sloping. It didn't look like a proper cinema, but it was a large hall.